I'm going to talk for a while today about relationships as a leader. So basically, one of the books we've read says that relationships are the leader's network. And I want to talk today, it's going to help you out in handling volunteers in ministry, understanding what you've got to do as a leader. Basically today, I'm going to give you a really good understanding of what you should be doing as a leader, developing things like that. As leaders here at Springs, you've got to, we have got to be able to lead the department that we're in, and what makes you really valuable as a leader in a local church is your ability to attract and put into a great working team volunteers. If you can get volunteers to work and attract them to you and devise ways that will work, it makes you of incredible value, because there's no way a church can grow and continue to hire every job that needs to be done to hire it. Doesn't even make sense. There's no way we could keep up. There's no way we could afford to do anything if we have to hire every person that works here. So we want to talk a little bit about leadership, and I'm going to try to link a lot of this up today with how you handle the people underneath you. Some of you don't have it underneath you. You're just doing a job right now, but it's still important to deal with. All right, I'm going to just kind of go through point after point and thoughts and give them to you, and it's on tape, so if you're not much of a writer and you want to just listen and absorb and make notes that are more relevant for you, that's fine. I put down, the mark of a leader is to deal with people with excellence. There's going to be two directions that every one of you is going to be concerned about, and that's going to be your relationship with the people that follow you or that are on your team, and then you must be concerned about this, and here's where a lot of people miss it. You must be concerned about how your people relate to each other and the people they serve. How are they relating to each other? Some leaders can be so concerned about what they think about me, and your relationship with them is wonderful. You're talking, loving, slapping backs, kissing babies, shaking hands, and they all think you're great. But when you're gone, it's a war zone in your department, because these people don't get along with each other, and they're all just trying to get to you. So you've got to be concerned about two directions, between the leader and the people, and then amongst themselves. And I think there'd be two areas there we need to look at as well, and that is between your volunteers and then between the people they serve. Are they treating the people they serve? Example, Super Church, youth ministries, cameramen, are they treating the people around them with excellence as well? And you've got to monitor that. Figure out ways to be watching this. Now, in a relationship between a leader and the person following him, I'm going to talk for a while about what's expected for you and what you contribute to this leadership. We're going to call it leader-follower relationship, because they're following you. If you have got a function of looking after the worship and praise, if you're looking after masters, super church, whatever area you're looking after, hospitality, if you've got somebody that's working with you on your team, they contribute something to this relationship, and you contribute something to this relationship. Both are vital, and I want to look at both of these areas. And listen intently, and there's a few things that might not apply to you. Most of them will, because all of them are leadership. If many times what you think doesn't apply simply means you haven't thought of it or aren't aware of that dynamic in what you're doing. So the first thing I put down was, what do we contribute to our teams as a leader? What should we be looking at? And I'm going to give you 10 things that we should be contributing. And this is a very concise, clear list, and you're going to feel when you hear it like, oh man, I have to do all these things. Yes, be looking at them, because you should be developing as a leader. I think sometimes there are many of you that might be at a spot where you've been given a position as a leader, you've made it out of positional leadership, where now people like you, you've developed influence over them, but now you've got to be able to take these people who like you and have volunteered to join you, and you've got to make them into a team that works, that are excited about being together. So what should you be contributing to this relationship? And what is this relationship right now? It is leader-follower or leader-team member. Number one, develop and help them to see the vision and the purpose of what they're doing. People will leave you or be unhappy and bring discontent and strife into your department or into your team of volunteers if they begin to lose, why am I doing this? When they stop looking at why, they start looking at their problems. So develop and help them to see the vision and the purpose of what they're doing. And you've got to think of ways to do this all the time. I wish you could get up just when they join your team and say, this is what we're here for, rah, 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 and think for the rest of their time in your ministry area, they're going to have that vision clear. But you are going to have to continually be vision casting. What's our purpose? What are we doing here? And then painting pictures with words, doing things, whether it's testimonies that helps your team to see we are important. We have a purpose that's higher than just the jobs. The second thing a leader's got to contribute to his team is to teach them clearly the goals and the objectives, because we all don't do everything. That's the problem with many small organizations, small churches. Everyone just does everything. What are the goals? What are the objectives for your team? And if you can keep them focused on those goals and objectives, then they are going to begin to develop and think for themselves as well. The third thing that a leader's got to contribute, you've got to help your team, and you have to see that long-range plans and the organizational structure needed to get there are understood by your people. You and I both know where we're going in a general sense. We know the church is going to be growing. So the long-range plans are going to be growth. It means it's going to put demands on you and I. What are the structures you have in place? You could look at any one of you here and say, what are my structures? I've got to understand them clearly. When it comes to Becky handling the building, how many weddings are we doing in a year? And how many things are, what are they happy? Are we meeting this need properly? What team do I have involved in this? What's our purpose? You can look at your team and you've got to write this out, and you need to sit down and meditate after, because I'm going to blast through these things and I wish I could give you lots of examples for each one, but I'm hoping that you can sit down and think this thing through, because this is going to be a way to critique yourself when we get done today. Okay, see that long-range plans and the organizational structure needed to get there are clearly understood. If you're having a problem right now getting volunteers, what are you going to do in a year? If the systems you are using right now to get volunteers aren't working, then change them. Radically change them. Figure out whole different ways. Look at it in a whole different ball game. Ruben sent me about a month ago a copy of a story on thinking. It was had to do with vertical and horizontal thinking. And the story goes like this. If I slaughter it, I'll get you a copy. But it has to do with in a country where this guy owes a big debt to a merchant. He comes to collect and he's going to go to jail. He's going to lose everything. And the guy gives him a choice. I love your daughter. Give me your daughter. In exchange, I'll wipe your debt clean and she can come be with me. He was attracted to her. He wanted her. And that's not really a great option for a father. It was either that or everyone's going to jail. So the guy says, I tell you what, let's put a black pebble and a white pebble right off the road here. Let's just put a black pebble and a white pebble into a bag. And we'll reach down and pull out the pebble and the white pebble. If you pull out a white pebble, your debt's clean, your daughter stays with you. Pull out a black pebble and she comes with me and your debts are clean as well. So that's kind of the thing. Now there's a problem, because the guy in debt with his daughter standing there beside him says, okay, let's do this thing. So let's call him the banker, because I'm trying to grab terms here. So he reaches down to the ground and he pulls out two white pebbles, and he hides them in his hand. I'm sorry, two black pebbles. Hides them in his hand, drops them into the bag, and only the girl sees this. So this man, this evil man, is about to trick her father, and either way, she's going with him now. So what does she do? Well, normal thinking says if she speaks up right now, they're at his mercy anyway, right? He doesn't even have to give him this alternative. And they show you in this thing how you think this thing through. Well, I could call him a cheat, but if he does, my dad's in his mercy anyway. How do you think this thing through? And one of the alternatives that they said that this woman should probably do is wait. She was the one pulling it out, by the way. She was to reach into this bag and pull up the pebble and would decide her fate. White meant she stayed home. Her dad's debts were clear. Black meant she pulled this pebble out and she went with this man and her dad's debts were clear. Now she's got this problem. Her dad doesn't realize this guy's cheating. She's got to pull in front of her dad and these people around her. So what they suggested she do, when you think it from a whole different perspective, reach into the bag, pull out a black pebble, drop it accidentally onto the ground where it's with all the other pebbles. and go, oh, I didn't even get a chance to look at the color. But you know what? If you look in the bag and see which one's left, you'll know which one I pulled out. You understand what happened there?
Yeah.
It's just thinking differently. It's, you know, it doesn't matter whether you want to call it vertical, horizontal, or a paradigm shift, but it's thinking differently, thinking out of the box, solving problems without typical ways of solving them. You guys are going to have to figure out ways for your structures. Are they meeting the needs that we've got? And if you're not, there are ways out there. Number four. And also, you need to not always look at other people as your problem when you solve this. I just can't give announcements for you better and better all the time. With 50 ministries in the church and us moving to probably 100 in the next year, trying to find time to solve your area's problems by from the pulpit all the time will not work. Occasionally is fine. You're going to have to develop systems and structures that are clearly understood. Number four, what do leaders contribute? You need to allocate the responsibilities and determine accountability for major departments in your ministry. You need to allocate the responsibilities and determine accountability. Many of you right now are doing more than most of the churches are doing. You're running more people, you've got more volunteers, and you need clear lines, whether you have to use flow charts, whether you have to have your people understand where they function. But they need to understand their responsibility. They need to know what they're accountable for on a regular basis, or they're going to be confused. When you give somebody volunteers, if the volunteer feels like they don't know what's happening and the leader doesn't know what's happening, you will never hang on to volunteers. That's one of the things that causes you to lose volunteers. Number five, what should we contribute as leaders to our volunteers? You need to decide how you will monitor and measure the progress and decide corrective action taken. This is vital. You've got to decide how to measure what you're doing. If you've got something to do, whether it's super church or ushers, how do you measure if the ushers are being effective, for example? And then how do you bring about change? You have to think this thing through. You can't just put a system in and say, well, I talked to Pastor Leon, this is the system we're going to use, and the system stinks, and five people and five other departments don't flow well with you. What do? You go there and you got to know how to change, take corrective action. How do I change it to the next level? Every one of us here are going to have to become good at measuring and monitoring the effectiveness of what you're doing. Is it going to meet the need? I had a meeting with Craig the other day, just sat down and said, okay, it's awesome what we're doing so far, but I got to tell you, this is one of the things that I am looking to that I want to do with television. It's going to change how we do television and how he runs his staff, because I need to change this thing. And we're going to have, and it's for me as pastor, I've been kind of monitoring the effect of TV on our church, how I can help me to do things in a better way. And so I need to change some stuff. You guys need to monitor your people and say, are they doing the job effectively? How do you monitor them? I don't know. If it's super church, maybe you've got supervisors that drop in. Maybe you drop in. Maybe there's other people. Maybe you have questionnaires that go to the parents. If you're ushering, maybe you figure out ways to talk. Maybe you're just out there talking to people. Say, how do the ushers go today? Or maybe you're talking to the ushers themselves. Like, I'm just brainstorming because there's such a diverse groups here, but you've got to figure out ways to monitor worship and praise. Am I hitting the mark with worship and praise? Do people really enter into worship and praise, or are we just doing the ones that we like or the ones that are cool to the musicians? Well, you know, sometimes musicians and people in the congregation like different songs. Some musicians love jazz, and jazz bugs most people. You know what I mean? It just really depends. How are you monitoring how effective your people are, and how can you change what's going on? Master's Commission is another thing. Every year we're looking at Master's Commission. This is how we run these kids. Now, is there anything we got to change? We're monitoring our effectives. Are we producing the leaders that we want? Is there something missing in this leader when we get done? If so, how can we correct how we do Master's Commission? Whether we look at the hospitality, what's the purpose of hospitality? Are we monitoring it? Well, you know, what's the food like? Monitoring the quality of the food, monitoring the quality of the coffee, monitoring how friendly these people are. You're going to have to sit down in your own mind and put a little sheet in front of you and say, how do I monitor my people? What are they like when I'm not around? There's so many things, and only you could probably make a list to decide how to monitor what you've been given to do, and then how to take corrective action when things aren't going well. It might be confronting that person with excellence, and you'd better learn how to confront with excellence. If you've got one renegade team member that no one wants to work with, they will bankrupt your entire volunteer system. People will quit like crazy. You're a wonderful leader, but you got somebody over top of them. And if you're not careful, you'll put somebody in charge who deals with you with excellence. Go ahead, Lewis. Deals with you with excellence, but doesn't deal with the people with excellence. And so you literally need to be talking to the people who your leaders are leading. By that I mean, if I've got somebody in charge of 50 people, and their job is to use these 50 people as a team for this purpose, I don't just talk to that leader. I'm out walking amongst these people. Hey, how's Bob doing? How's things going? Is there anything we can help you with? And let me know, is there anything we can do better? And I'm free to talk. I say, well, why would you undermine Bob's authority by going to the people? See, that's a bureaucratic thought. I'm not. I'm Bob's friend. I'm Bob's boss, immediate superior, and if I hear anything, I'm going to do nothing but help him do his job better. So we can't get territorial or defensive either at someone saying, hey, you know, I was talking to so-and-so today, and they said this. No, it's fine. You know, finding out more data about us is just wisdom. So, number six. It's hard to teach this because if I was teaching it to one person doing one function, we could tailor this entire message after that, but I'm trying to nail everybody. Number six, act as a key resource for solving problems along the way. Nobody will understand the big picture as good as you in your department. And so you have got to be the resource to your people if they've got a problem. And if they come to you and... when they come to you, you ought to be a great problem solver. You ought to have at your disposal things to help them, even if it's not related to what they do. If an usher comes to Dennis and says, man, I'm having massive problems with my wife and my marriage. She's upset because I'm not sitting with her. I don't think I can usher anymore. There's a couple of things he needs to look at here. The first is this guy doesn't want you don't. This guy should not quit volunteering because that is his lifeline to the church and his sense of involvement. But somehow his wife is unhappy. Is it because he's too involved? And then Dennis discovers he runs camera for Craig. He volunteers for the school. He's out helping masters paint the building. He's running off tapes for Dave. He's making phone calls for Ruben. And now this guy has got a major problem. You know what I mean? So you've got to help this guy solve his problems. You know what? I'm sorry. You're going to have to quit about five of the things you do and pick up one or two. You're not going to keep your marriage going this way. Another thing you might want to do and help this guy solve this problem is say, have you gone to the marriage relation shop? Well, no. You know, we don't have time. Good. Drop three of the things you volunteer for. Say, yeah, but if I tell this guy to drop what he's volunteering, what if he drops what he's doing for me? You know what? You have to have a bigger picture. Your job is not to make what you do run perfectly. Your job is got to look at these people and say, hey, they're people. I want to help in a way pastor them. We're almost as leaders are pastors. That's one thing we've got to be doing. What's beneficial for him? And you're going to lose him anyway, right? Bottom line, you're going to lose him anyway because he's too stressed out. He's too maxed out. And so your job would be to help rescue this guy's marriage because if his marriage is gone, he's probably going to leave the church. How does he stay in a church when everyone he knows realizes his marriage is shot? It's easier for him to go to somewhere else where no one knows him and start fresh. So as we look at all the things we do, we've got to have a bigger picture. But you've got to be a key resource for solving problems along the way for your people, both in a way personally and structurally or getting the job done. A seventh thing, you've got to communicate the goals and the objectives. Can't even read my own writing. You've got to communicate goals and objectives and modifications along the way. There's nothing worse than having your whole team understand the system and then you change it, but don't tell everybody. Ever had that happen to you? Man, it's irritating. You just got this thing figured out. You've got to communicate all changes. And not only do you communicate it downline, but is this going to affect the ushers? Is this going to affect the staff? Is this going to affect the security alarms? Is this going to affect the cleaners? Is this going to affect the bathroom people? Who is this going to affect? Is this going to affect the parents? Do you want to tell them when they walk in or do you want to send them all letters? You're going to have to become as a leader to be able to communicate all changes along the way. That's just vital. Because if you don't, change is vital. Transitioning change, going from one step to the next step. Figure out, sit down and figure this out. How do I communicate the changes I'm about to make? I could pick on any one of you, but that one's pretty simple. Number eight. Leaders must motivate, inspire, encourage, reward, effort, and achievement. Ever watch somebody put in a humongous effort but achieve nothing? That's effort without achievement. You have to encourage that. The guy's learning. I think you've heard me say before, there's two things you've got to do as a leader. You got to motivate your team continually. And what's the second one? Give them ability. You've got to be giving them ability, teaching them, showing them how to do things. So motivate, inspire, encourage, and reward effort and achievement. If they've achieved something, figure out how to thank them. We don't all have to have credit cards and take them out for lunch, at $50 cost. That'd be nice. But with 50 or 60 teams going, it's not going to happen. But a simple matter of walking over, putting a hand on their shoulder and saying, that was incredible. Or a note. If you want to pick up a whole package of thank you cards that are distinct for you, and then just grab them. We have no problem picking up that and then writing them little notes, looking for people that have made, done things for you that are really excellent. You've got to keep morale up in a way. You've also got to be able to discipline unsatisfactory performance and know how to do that with excellence. Still number eight. In fact, the two things you've got to do to keep number eight going is you have to have an ability to keep two things balanced. You've got to maintain the morale of your team. You've got to discipline unsatisfactory performance. People who can't do this well lose team members because the second they correct them, they don't do it right and they get mad and they leave. But at the same time, you can't have lousy performance because no one's going to want to work on your team if there's no excellence. So how do you maintain excellence when you've got rookies coming on board? You've got to correct them. And I have discovered this, and I do this with all of you guys, that the second someone comes on board with me, that the best time to talk to them about change is immediately. Don't let them get entrenched in I'm good, because we're teaching them, you're good, you're awesome, you're a part of the team, and of course they are. But if they can't take correction immediately, then after, let's say they've been with you for 3 months, and now you decide you're going to correct something they've been doing for 3 months that's wrong. No, take the opportunity immediately. Another thing you'll notice is often you'll talk to me and say, I was with somebody and they said this, and I wish I'd have spoken up. Now how do I go back and bring it up again? You're going to have to train yourself in a way that when someone speaks up or does something inappropriately, or you catch them doing something that's not quite what you want, be good at immediately, lovingly just saying, hey, that's not exactly what I meant by that. Or, that's probably not the best way to deal with it. Let me show you how to do it. And you've got to figure out ways to discipline unsatisfactory performance. And I don't like the word discipline, okay, but I just couldn't think of another way to put it that quick. Confront it with excellence. People who you confront shouldn't even know they've been confronted, unless this guy's a bit of a jerk or you've got to shut him down. But I'm talking about a person who's trying to keep you happy. They shouldn't even know you've been confronting them. They're just thinking, hey, you're helping me out. You're helping me get to a new level. They're excited. Number nine. What do we contribute as leaders? We've got to take final responsibility for the results or the outcomes. Buck stops with us. Take final responsibility for the results or the outcomes. It won't work to tell me I delegated that. I don't know what happened. You weren't there helping that guy solve problems. So take final responsibility. You know what? Most of the people in your department can't handle it anyway. If something shuts down and doesn't work properly, and you go back to them and say, you didn't do this right, and everyone finds out that this thing crashed, just take the responsibility yourself and say, I didn't train that person, didn't explain to that person properly. I can find a way. If I've got somebody with that I don't think can handle real strong confrontation, I can think of a way almost in every circumstance to take the majority of the blame. And so can you. See, some of you think you got to find and blame somebody, and then that's corrected. No, blame is not the issue. Solving the problem is the issue. You can blame yourself and solve the problem. An example, let me just make one up. Let's say that one of you guys comes to me, and it's obviously that you did it wrong. I mean, it's a mess, and we got to get up, and I got to apologize from the pulpit for this thing. Okay? Let's say that happens. Why would I get up and nail you and say, I want to apologize on behalf of Barb, who messed up the entire membership thing? None of you are real members, and what have I just done? Let's think this thing through. All I've done is alienate Barb. I mean, she's not going to trust me as a boss or as a leader. But if I get up there and say, you know what, you guys, I've made a major mistake here in our administration offices. We've got some problems. I'm solving them. I'm working them out. I'm working with my staff to make sure we flow together. And I talk to Barb, and Barb says, it was my mistake. It's obviously my mistake. I said, no, it wasn't. I should have trained you better. I should have oversighted you better. I should have been involved more. There are many ways to look at it. See, I'm not talking about whitewashing this thing. I'm not talking about, oh, Barb, you're perfect, you're wonderful, you're incredible, you don't have any problems, it's all my problem. She sees to that, I'm just being a phony leader. But if there was a problem there, where was I? Or her immediate leader? Where was the person teaching her, showing her? You can figure out a way to take the responsibility. You may as well. You are great leaders. You can handle it if that person can't. And you can save that person. I'm going to talk a little bit about the four components of relationships between them and trusting them and them trusting you. Number 10, you've got to represent your group with excellence in its dealings with the wider environment. Much of what I'm getting today, the thoughts I'm getting from the book Understanding New Testament Leadership, and I'm just trying to cut through a lot of the technical jargon is just real simple points. You've got to represent your group in its dealings with the wider environment, which means if I've got to meet between three or four different of you groups and we sit down, represent your group with excellence. If the ushers are having a problem with Super Church, if Super Church is having a problem with worship and praise parents, if staff are having problems with, and I'm making these things up, I don't have these existing problems right now, but if these things are going down, how do you represent with excellence? We have a legitimate problem, I just can't back down and say, oh, there's no problem. How do I represent my people with excellence? As I sit down at the table with you and say, no, we've got to solve this problem. There's no way they can meet the criteria you've put down for this. How can we solve this? You've got to be able to represent, and you've got to represent it with excellence. The bigger we get, the better of a leader you're going to have to be at sitting at a table and talking with other leaders to solve problems. Now that's just 10 things, and I've gone through them really quickly, and I've actually taken a whole whack of stuff and tried to put it into one-liner so you can just think this way. But I would encourage you to take these 10 things because I need you to contribute these 10 things and sit down and look at them. Look at your group, grab an hour, sit down and say, okay, as a leader, am I developing a vision of my people? Am I? What do they understand their purpose? Well, that's number one. You know, do we have a clear goal? What's our goal for over the summertime? What's our goal come September? Do I have a system that does what I'm supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Well, take a look at what I've asked you. If you're not clear what you're supposed to do, come see me. I say, okay, what exactly do you need from me? Well, I need you to find volunteers. I need you to put those volunteers onto a team. And I need that team to do this function. Might be just bringing it down to real simple. And so you got to sit down and divide this up. Excuse me, and say, how do I find these volunteers? Where do I get them from? Who can help me? Take a look at every one of these 10 things and sit down. Because for me, it helps me. I look at these 10 things and I go through books all the time and I'm just trying to look at myself. Where am I missing something? Because what I used to be like was I'd put a system in place and I'd hammer away at this system and try to make it work and people wouldn't fit or what they needed done wouldn't fit. And now I'm almost always saying, what do I need to change? What am I not doing for you guys? What do I need to get into your hands more? One of the greatest skills you can achieve, by the way, or grow is your ability to read books, listen to tapes, and to assimilate it. Means to understand it. I am amazed. I get pastors coming in here all the time who'll talk to me and they can quote John Maxwell verbatim. They can quote Stephen Covey. They understand the four time quadrants. They understand all of these different things. And yet they can't get it from this hand. They spout. You think, whoa, this guy could teach this stuff. But he's never been able to apply it in his life. And so you've got to be able to not just get it up here. And the only way to do that is to treat the message I did a number of months ago or a year ago on knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. That is the way to break anything down and become wise. Get the knowledge, get the data, then sit down and how does this knowledge apply to what I do? And that takes meditation. It takes meditation. I'm going to be really blunt for just a second. If you can't think hard enough to concentrate on these 10 points right now, you ain't ever going to lead a good group. If you can't even sit down and concentrate on a book, take it apart and find the parts that affect you, you will never make it in this leadership. I'm being very blunt for a second. We have got gigantic challenges ahead of us beyond anything we can think, and you're going to have to become world class. So today I'm going to provoke you a little bit. Don't just read books that give you the raving. Raving fans is great. That's an attitude. You are not going to just lead your group on attitude alone. Attitude is great But you're going to have to start solving problems better than you ever. I'm not calling anybody done. You're going to, better than you've ever done. Move to a new level. Move to a new level. And these 10 things literally are applicable at every level of leadership. There's things here right now I know that I have neglected over the course of the summer that I've got to get onto right away, because I just go through this list and say, yeah, I got to do this. I've got to deal with that. You can look at these 10 simple things. They are what your people need from you as a leader. Okay? Now, you can make excuses and say, well, you know, I don't have, if I had the money. You notice none of these things are money. Well, if I had this. No, don't go there. Go through this thing and become better at what you do. Think, sit down, problem solve. It's going to take some time. Say, well, I'm too busy to have time to think and problem solve. Good, then sit down and problem solve that first. My first problem is finding more time. What do your people contribute? Their time, their effort, and their talent. That's what they're giving you. And you know what? They're worth their weight in gold. They are worth their weight in gold. Peter Drucker says this in one of his books. He said, the greatest leaders of the new century are going to be those who are involved in nonprofit organizations, because they will develop an ability to lead volunteers and paid staff. Some of you lead paid staff, but most of you lead volunteers. And if you come from a business background, you will look at this thing and think, I need to pay someone. You can't expect them to back off right now. Right now, there are organizations running thousands of people getting things done. And it's simply a matter of sitting down and dividing up those responsibilities. Yes, of course, we have to hire staff, and we always will be. But to solve every one of your problems by letting Leon announce it from the pulpit, or hire me a staff member, or give me some money, that's not the answer. There are times it is. Don't be afraid to ask for it. I expect you to. But don't be embarrassed when I shut you down and say no. I think there's another way to do this thing. So these 10 are very important. I'm going to just talk for a little bit longer if I can get to some of this stuff. And you can get a tape and just meditate on this later. But I want to talk about the relationships between you and your people now. We've talked about what you contribute, what you need to contribute to them, and what they contribute to you. But what about the relationship between you and them? Okay? There are basically four, and I'm going to refer the odd time here to this book, Understanding Leadership, because I have just found that at every problem I have, usually I find one of the things in this book. This guy just thinks so radically different about it. One of the things that he gives us four things that are the building blocks, Tom Marshall, of relationships. He says trust is one, and it's the most fragile of the four. He says love, which is the most rugged and the enduring of the four. He says respect or honor, which is the most neglected. And he says understanding or knowledge, which takes the longest. I want to try to make some comments about all four of those, and I'm going to do it right now. In talking about trust, trust is very fragile, but your people are trusting your judgment, your resourcefulness, and your perseverance. They're trusting your integrity. It's a lousy thing if you're sitting in a meeting with all your people and they look at you and you're trying to communicate how hard you work. And you go, oh, sometimes I just feel like quitting. That's the stupidest thing you could ever do. You're a lousy leader doing that. Because you've just contributed to all these people that you have times of thinking of quitting. Well, of course you do. I do. But that's not what people who are not as good a leader as you yet need to hear. They need to know that you've got perseverance. They need to know that you're going to be resourceful. They're trusting your judgment. You're the leader. All of you here, for example, you've banked your lives and your careers on me. You have quit your jobs, your careers, the things you could do in the world, and you have come to work for me. And what are you going to do if I screw up so bad the whole thing blows up next month? So it shows you trust me. What does that mean you're trusting? You're trusting my judgment to take this corporation somewhere? You're trusting my resourcefulness to find the money, the people, the things that we need to go to the next level? You're trusting my perseverance that I'm not going to walk in here next week and go, you know what, I'm tired of this, I quit. Or I walk around the halls going, what? Yes, can I help you? You don't have to say anything with your words. You're telegraphing it with your face. So as leaders, people are trusting your judgment, they're trusting your resourcefulness, they're trusting your perseverance, they're trusting your integrity. So we want people to trust us. We want to trust our people. You want to build trust in your people. And in page 154, you write that number down too, because you've all got this book as a manual for yourselves. He teaches us how to build others' trust in us. He teaches us how to build trustworthiness. He says, be prepared to take risks in your team. You can't trust somebody if you don't play to their strengths. He's bringing out the fact that you give somebody a job, but they're not qualified to do and they fail. No, I don't trust them anymore. Well, you gave them a job they can't even do. He deals with a whole chapter on building trust gradually, expressing your confidence in your people and in their progress. If they fail, give them another chance. Give them the opportunities and the rewarding responsibilities that their trustworthiness merits. He's talking about building trustworthiness in your people. Many people, I've watched leadership over the years, and pastors have said this to me, well, I don't have any good people. So where do you find your good people? How do you attract? One pastor said this the other week, how do you attract such incredible high-level people? And I said, well, I mean this with all respect, I didn't get most of them that way. I didn't come that way. I'm growing it. You're growing it. But we build trust gradually. We give you something to do. You do it with excellence. We work together. Sometimes if you don't trust your people and you say, well, I don't have anybody to delegate anything to. I'm stuck doing it myself. Well, why are you stuck doing it yourself? Because I got nobody that could handle this. Why don't you have anybody that can handle this? Now we're right at the problem. Why don't you have anybody that can handle this? Now you got a bunch of choices. Because Leon won't hire me somebody. Because I don't have any good people. Because everyone wants to do something else. You are now at the point of becoming a victim or a leader. We want to become a leader. We want to solve those problems. You're going to build trust in your people bit by bit. Give them a project. Let them do it. Let them run with it. When they get done, give them something bigger. An example is a phone call I made the other day. 4 years ago, we did a CD, and I was involved in the songs, the picking, the preparation, what we're going to do, the studios. I talked with the studios, the guy involved. Then Debbie Craig and I sat down, worked this thing out. I was at the front leading the worship and praise. I put my voice on the cassette. Debbie got a phone call about 2 weeks ago, and I said, oh, guess what? By the way, I'm not even showing up. So you and Craig just take the entire baby over and just run it. Get the CD cut. Get it going. I'm not coming. I'm not praying. I'm not singing. I'm not doing nothing. Just get this thing done. And to me, I just feel awesome being able to do that because I can just hand that thing off. Now, they've been with me for 6 years, okay? A little bit here. The first thing I trusted David with was just find me so many songs. But as we keep going, we trust you with more and more. Every one of you is in a place right now where I trust you, okay? Where we trust each other. And a lot of you right now will be struggling with going to a new level. You're going to have to determine what do I need to do to go to that new level. And you can really, you know what frustration comes from? Expectations. It's one thing. What else does it come from? Okay. How about an inability to produce results? And what is an unrealistic expectation? You know, yes, unrealistic expectations can do that. But the second thing is an inability to produce results. Anytime your team cannot produce the results that you want them to produce, they're going to get frustrated. They're going to get tired. They're going to get wiped out. They're going to look at this thing and say, I don't know if I'm even the leader to do this. They're going to think, you know, I'm tired of this already. And what you're tired of is your inability to produce results. So most people cap off somewhere, except for those who sit down and go, okay, this Toyota won't go faster than 60 miles an hour. Okay? And I need something to go 100 miles an hour. So how am I going to get it going faster? Well, it's going to take redesigning this Toyota. They might have to cough the engine out and drop in a Ferrari. Whatever you're going to take, I don't know. But it's going to take us sitting down and thinking that thing through. You might need a break as a leader. Get holidays. Do you guys take proper holidays? Do you take proper breaks? Are you taking time with your family, your marriage, your home? Are you going out and getting recreated? Recreation is recreation. You can say, well, what's that? I don't have time. I'm so involved here. I disagree. Don't use me as your reason. Okay. I have not got a gun to anybody's head. Make sure you get recreated. Trust, we're going to get off talking back to trust. We're talking about building trust in our team. They're trusting you. One of the building blocks of relationships in our ministry will be your people trusting you and you trusting them. So get that book and kind of go through that chapter a little bit and find out what breeds confidence in your people, and do they have confidence in you? One of the things we're going to have to look out for is, what are the things that damage trust? What are the things that damage trust? Breach of confidence. Someone comes to talk to me, and the next service I get up and share, yeah, I was counseling with a guy the other day who owns a McDonald's somewhere here in Winnipeg, and he has this problem. I told him, boy, is anybody going to come to me for counseling after that? I doubt it. So your breach of confidence, disloyalty or betrayal, dishonesty. List some of the things that destroy trust. The second thing that you need to develop in your team is love and leadership. Okay, and Jesus says, or the Word of God says in 1 Corinthians, even though you have 10,000 guardians in Christ, you do not have many fathers. For in Christ Jesus, I became your father through the gospel. 2 Samuel 15:21 is a verse where it's talking about, it goes like this. It's talking about David. As surely as the Lord lives, and as my Lord the King lives, wherever my Lord the King may be, whether it means life or death, there will your servant be. People will die for you if they sense you love them and care about them. They will do anything for you. They'll go through thick and thin. And it's building a culture into your team of them trusting you, you trusting them, you love them, you care about them. Love is shown by caring. Leaders care for their people. The leaders care for their people will therefore include concern for issues, proper facilities, equipment, training. And it gives a list on page 163 of the things you're going to have to deal with your people about in order to make them feel loved. Are you looking out for them as a leader? Just walking around, walking slowly through the crowd, showing compassion and love to your people, being there for them, is going to make them feel the same way. Page 166 of Understanding Leadership as well. It says here, things that wound love or make love difficult. Cruelty. What is cruelty? Well, it's when your aim is to make somebody suffer. Now, pain often is brought to bear for other reasons, but just to make someone suffer. Disliking someone. How do you handle dislike? Some of you here don't dislike other people on the team. Figure out why. Solve it, please. Figure out why you dislike them. What is dislike? Dislike does not mean you don't love them. Dislike does not mean that you don't will work together. It just, it's a feeling of distaste that you have for how they deal with things. Rejection, spurning intimacy. One of the greatest problems you're going to deal with as you grow, which I deal with on a regular basis too, is when people want to get to know you better. How do you handle that? The other day I was on the phone and it was an out-of-country call. And I'm on my way into a store. I stop outside the store. I got this phone in my hand. It's up to my ear. And the guy that comes to our church, I don't know him real well, sees me. And he stops and he comes running over to me. And he's standing right in front of me. And I've got this phone call. So I look at him. And I said, hi, it's good to see you. And I keep talking on my phone. And this phone call is very important. I cannot lose this phone call. I cannot even move my phone because I don't want to drop this call. So I keep talking. And I'm trying to talk. I'm trying to keep eye contact with this guy so he knows I care about him. I love him. And finally he gets just kind of, I don't know, I think he was disgruntled. He turns around and walks off. Well, when I see this guy next, I'm going to apologize to him. And I actually looked for him in the picture directory and phoned him up and said, I think it was on my phone anyway. And said, you know, I said, I'm sorry. I was on the, and this guy is coming to talk. He's happy, he's excited. And I had to almost in a way movie him off to deal with this. People are always going to be approaching you who want an intimate friendship with. How are you going to handle that? They all can't be your intimate friends. Can't have 1,000 people being your intimate friends, but you're going to have to deal with love and how to deal with people in those areas. The third thing he talks about is respect or honor. He says this is the most neglected thing in leadership there is. It's to make your people have dignity. He says, when I honor or respect people, what I am doing is recognizing their value, their worth, or their dignity. When I do so, I become aware of how rich my life is because it is surrounded and penetrated by all these valuable, worthy people. You have to decide, that's how I feel when I come to work. That's how I feel with my team. There's one other thing I wanted to read you out of here. In page 174, he talks about how do you show honor or respect to your people? And he'll give you example after example. Today, I'm kind of giving you a message that makes you work with the workbook better. But I think that it's you need to sit down and go through something. How do I build or show? I'm sorry, how do I show honor and respect to these people? You know, saying so. He goes down with getting their opinions. He deals with a number of things you can do to make people feel respected and honored with you. I have to ask you a question. I was asked this question one time. By your team, what's the most important thing? That you're liked or respected? Good question, isn't it? On your team, what's the most important thing? That you're liked or respected? Respect. If you pursue like above respect, then you will avoid confrontation. You will avoid helping that person change. Now, a person who is confrontational and arrogant can make this decision easily. Oh, they're going to respect me. No, you work on like lots. If you like somebody but you don't respect their leadership ability, you're going to quit on them anyway. And so you want them to respect you. You need to respect them. And it deals with how to respect somebody. And I'm encouraging you to read this because all of us have got to deal with people on an incredible level of treating them with incredible respect. One of the things that's scary for me is the fact that you all represent me to these people out there. They say that in this corporation where the church is now, I no longer am known by me because no one gets to me hardly. I am now known by all of you guys. and of course we all represent Jesus. But as a leader, and the people on your team, they represent you. How they respond, how they treat the people. So it's ongoing, this thing. And you want to honor them, respect them, teach them to honor and respect. And the last one that I'll deal with, and we're going through a lot of stuff, so I know, but is understanding. And that takes the longest. In John 10:14, Jesus said, I am the good shepherd, I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Everybody wants to be understood, and that takes the longest on your team. I have done things sometimes in situations that I look back and I am so embarrassed because somebody was as clear as they could, were talking to me about something, and I totally misunderstood them, read between the lines, and answered them according to what I thought they were saying to me. Being understood is so important. One of the things, just a little exercise I think that's important that you can do is when someone says something to you, say it back to them. That's a real skill you can develop. So, can I say this back to you? Is this what I think I'm hearing you saying? You're saying that, and repeat it back to them. You know what they'll say almost every time? No, not really, that's not what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. And you listen to them talk again, and you go, okay, now is this what you're saying? And say it again to them. That's a horn. It might take 2 or 3 or 4 times of you going back and forth with them to deal with this issue. But make sure you understand what they're saying. Because I have pulled some incredible boners thinking I understood somebody. And then realized that they weren't saying that at all. They actually were coming to me, and I didn't take enough time to understand them. So with your people, they want to be understood. Your kids want to be understood. When they hit teenagers, they have this favorite saying, you just don't understand. And they don't realize you probably do. Maybe you don't. But in this lesson today, my goal is this. This is my goal so that you understand, man, you went through a lot of stuff. Your team is vital to the life of this church. What you do is of a paramount importance. Everything that you do is connected to all the rest of us here. So it's vital that you be learning and growing. Develop relationships and think about your team. Take some of this, if you need this cassette, go through it, fine. You can get it for just, they'll run off you for free. But when it comes to this book, even on understanding leadership, when you go to that and go through it, it'll help you to understand how to deal with them and how to raise up a team. And it's hard sometimes going through books. I go through books sometimes and I have to sit there with my highlighter and go, man, could you think of an easier, Eric, there's a buggy, these guys that write books and they write them as complicated as they can. And you think, duh, could you put this in a simple format for me? But I think many of them are struggling with the problem of making this book work in every area. And so you've got to maintain just a principle and allow you to find an analogy that works with that principle. And that's probably one of the things you can do that can help you understand some of the stuff you're reading. So over the course of the summer, whether you're going on holidays, whatever you're doing, get some recreation time. And when you come back, just be thinking and sit down and find time to plan things out in your life and in the ministry that you're running. And I am always open. I've got a few people right now that I have spoken to and said, okay, I want you to talk to me. I'm ready to change everything we're doing just to make it easier for you. What do you need? Say, well, I need this. No, that's in the present system. I'm open to the whole system being changed. What is it you need to change? And always my challenge out to you is always saying, what is it that you need to do your job better, faster, quicker, easier, with less stress, whatever. I'm always saying that. You can always be thinking, how can I do this service better? How can I do it faster? How can I do it with less collateral damage? How can I do this thing? Be thinking that way. I believe the anointing of God is on you. And when I do teachings like this, we're doing it twice a month, it's just to kind of provoke you, okay? Provoke each other to good works. One of the things that we can't do is get to a place where we think we've got the system in place, because we don't have a system that works. The system we're running right now, we didn't even use last year. And right now we're all looking at these systems thinking, how are we going to reach these people more effectively for Jesus? And what you do is vital. But I think everybody here realizes this, I know, but leadership is not just looking good, kissing babies, and shaking hands. The problem is the responsibility comes fully to bear on you when you're given a position and a paycheck, and you say, okay, then we're looking to you for answers. We're looking to you to solve problems like you guys are looking to me, like we're looking to our people. And let's pray. I want to just pray for you all right now as we're dealing with this issue. Father, I thank you right now that every one of us is just human. Every one of us, Father, only has the knowledge and the ability that we've placed up there, that we've learned through experience, the things we've done, the things we've read. And Father, before us is a challenge that is sometimes is so beyond anything we can imagine, ask, or think. And the devil would like to make us think we can't do it. But Father, we can do this thing. And Father, if we just sit down and pray and get focused on you, Holy Spirit, you are going to lead us into all truth. You are going to give us a joy and a peace, Father, in all that we do. I ask right now for every leader here that, Father, you just quicken them in their marriages, their homes, their sex lives, for those that are married. Quicken them, Father, in their finances. Quicken their joy. Let them be in God or in Theos, enthusiastic about everything they do. Father, let them protect their hearts with all diligence, because out of their heart flows the issue of life. Father, I pray that right now upon each one of them. Make them an incredible vessel of honor to the people that they lead. Let them, as they walk the halls and as they minister to their team, Father, I pray that they just be like a breath of fresh air. Let them be like a well of refreshing water, that everywhere we go as leaders, that our team, Lord, they just feed off of our confidence, they feed off of our perseverance, they feed off of our love, our acceptance, our forgiveness. They feed off of that leadership quality that just believes we are going to do this, whatever we've got to do. Father, I just pray the saturation of the Holy Spirit upon our offices, upon every person here. In Jesus' precious name, amen and amen.